Blog Talk Radio.
Well, are we losing our basic rights in America. For example, the Supreme Court and other courts have often failed in the last few years to support an interpretation of American law that would seem to include a lot of these rights. And now we've got issues with free speech on university campuses. And so if the judges, for example, in the Sanctuary City case can't be depended upon to rule in such a way as is consistent with the Constitution, and if these universities and other groups are trying to shut down free speech in the name of tolerance, in the name of anti-hate speech, what we've got is pieces of the Constitution that are left over. It's a very scary situation to be in. And so these activist judges are really going crazy. I've got a lot of news for you today. Man, I have 1,000 stories, but I've got, first off, a couple of big stories, one of which is the judge made the decision that the federal government cannot cut off funding to cities or states or counties where they are not enforcing federal law. So, I mean, this, it seems to me that through the especially the federal judges, but through the judiciary in general, they are, what they're trying to do is to bring in a kind of legal theory that would be a lot more comfortable in Europe. So here's a little bit from Fox on Trump slamming Sanctuary City ruling and accusing his opponents of judge shopping. Or, in other words, looking for a court that will enforce things how you want it to be.
I was not clear on this Sanctuary City ruling on a judge who tries to say, Mr. President, you can't be withholding funding. It was in San Francisco, a federal judge blocking a Trump administration order withholding funding from communities that don't cooperate with authorities, immigration authorities, more to the point, saying the president doesn't have this kind of authority. The U.S. district judge in question, his name is William Orrick, issued this temporary ruling in a lawsuit that essentially means the executive order cannot stand or be implemented just yet. Now, what normally happens is others then respond to that. Other judges take similar efforts, or state and or local attorneys act on that. We haven't seen that yet. It's only this judge for the time being, but in San Francisco itself, a sanctuary city. The fallout from all of this early on with Fox News contributor, townhall.com, political editor Guy Benson, Fox News contributor Lisa Booth, Catalina Magazine publisher Kathy Aru. All right, so Kathy, I want to go to you, end it with you, on what you make of this, because I suspect, if history is any guide, other judges will make similar rulings, and in the interim, nothing can be done, right?
Right, exactly. And this is actually good, because there are no such things as sanctuary cities. These are cities that happen not to turn in, let's say, undocumented citizens. So if you are an illegal immigrant or undocumented citizen, you can cooperate with the police without fear of having to show your papers. So to say that you're not going to fund these cities, who are you talking about exactly? Who are you taking the funding away from? It's not very clear. It wasn't a clear executive order. So,
well, if you're getting any federal funding, Lisa, what the president is saying and what those who have been arguing this case have been saying is that you have to adhere to the laws of the federal government. And among those laws is if you're here illegally, you can't be, and you certainly can't, you know, protect those who are here illegally or make it difficult for authorities to find them.
Well, absolutely. And San Francisco is the city where Kate Steinle's murderer found refuge after being deported multiple times and with several felony offenses. And it's important to note, look, I'm not an attorney, but the Illegal Immigration Reform Act of 1996 makes it pretty clear that states and municipalities have to assist and comply with the federal government an immigration request. It was also under President Obama that his own Solicitor General wrote a report essentially saying that sanctuary cities are in violation of federal law and thus can be withheld federal funding. So I suspect that the White House, I've not seen anything out from the White House yet, but I suspect that they'll continue to fight this in court.
Guy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think they should probably appeal this. And based on what I'm seeing, this is still very early on. It appears that the injunction that was just ordered is relatively narrow. And the judge did say that the Trump administration still has the authority to withhold federal grants from sanctuary cities and to designate jurisdictions as sanctuary cities. So I think we're still going to see how this shakes out and how much this may play out across the country in other places as well. Another angle on this, Neil, is congressional action. If it's going to be thwarted at the judicial level, any executive order along these lines of sanctuary cities, maybe Trump can come to Congress and say, we're going to withhold these funds in statute so it can't get thrown out by the courts, and maybe draw the line there and see if the Democrats will shut down the government to protect sanctuary cities.
Real quickly, at least I want to bounce this off you to Guy's point. This has been tried and looked at in a number of lawsuits in Seattle to Massachusetts cities, Lawrence and Chelsea, as well as in the San Francisco area and in Richmond. But an issue to the narrowness of this case is that the president didn't have the authority to set conditions on the allocations of federal funds, which I think was Kathy's point that it's vaguely worded. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, we'll see. Again, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to get into, you know, those sort of tidbits. But I know that presidents have broad authority under immigration. But to Guy's point, there already has been legislation, I think, to the effect to cut off funding.
I mean, I think the thing to do is to go through the legislature, because you've got these situations with these judges where they act like they're absolutely beyond any restraint, any, you know, that they are a law unto themselves. And what I'm afraid of happening, which you are already seeing it playing out across the United States in every conceivable way, is a judge who takes umbrage, who gets offended by Trump, and then decides it's up to him or her to save the republic. It's absolutely criminal what they're doing in some of these situations where they've got, you know, authority, or at least, you know, these people that, like this guy that gets up and says, Trump is dangerously insane. And I, you know, he's a psychiatrist. He works at Johns Hopkins. I have a professional duty to stand up and state that we need to remove him from office. I mean, does anybody think this is not a political statement? So you've got all of these people, and here's a problem. When everything defaults into politics, what happens? And I mean, that's the whole purpose of the rule of law, was to get beyond that type of thing, and everybody follows the same law, and then you're able to have a functional society. But all of these people that are offended by Trump, and really, there's a lot of articles, very good articles out there, that are talking about the essentially juvenile response of the left, and they're just continuing just amazement and fury over the fact that Trump was able to win. So, I mean, if this alone doesn't show you how dangerous these people are and how they need to be defeated. And this is I don't think conservatives have ever really taken seriously since the American Revolution, is in these type of scenarios, you have to defeat your enemies. They have to go in. They have to beat this stuff at a judicial, you know, a federal presidential level, the main decision makers. But you have to go through the court system, and you have to go through the Congress to put a stamp, your stamp on these things. Because if you don't, these individuals are never going to cooperate, because they think they're listening to a higher law. That's the weird thing. Even though they reject the rule of law, broadly speaking, they think individually They've got this mandate of socialism, this mandate of Marxism, and they're carrying it forward to try to save the world. It's a crazy idea that totally ignores every single fact in general or in specific, and in generally just, you know, it doesn't matter what they're wrong about specifically, because generally speaking, they know that they're right. It reminds me of this guy, this rocket science, a literal rocket science scientist from Germany. And I asked him about immigration, and he got all huffy, and he jumped up to leave after about 30 seconds conversation. If you can imagine, I guess I should have given him a trigger warning. And he says, I said, have you studied Islam? Have you studied Sharia law? And he goes, no, I haven't. No, I haven't. And it doesn't matter. And I thought, wow, the only way you could know if it would matter is if you had studied it, right? But in the meantime, to say that my ideas are triumphant over every other idea in history and history itself is an insane vision that's really destroying the places in Europe and in America where it's being applied. 617, 618 on the button, Kelly O'Connell. A little more Dale Watson for you. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450.
Y'all ready? Can I get a hell yeah? Honky tonkers don't cry. We have to have a good time, even when we feel down. And if a tear should fall, it's going to land on a smile. Always having a ball, honky tonkers don't cry.
All right, switching gears here, there's an incredible, astounding story that's out there in which involves Obama. When the Obama administration did the deal with Iran, one of the things that they did is they took seven people that were on a list of people and 14 other men who were part of an arms procurement, but seven people on a list of prisoners, and he swapped them out, and he said that they were just being held because of sanctions for breaking economic laws, and in fact they were part of a group of people that were scouring the globe for arms. And as you recall, this state, Iran, it has been named as the number one sponsor of terrorism. And that's who basically Obama went and just got down on the ground and was sucking their toes. Anything to get this deal done, because I think for one reason, he didn't think that he needed it for his legacy. Now, why somebody who's so far to the left needs a legacy? The only legacy he needed was to do something crippling to America, something crippling to our ability to our economic ability, which he obviously did for 8 years, or do something else that is harmful to America to help the world leftist movement. Don't forget, by the way, that in the same way that the Christians, and then not the Jews, but the Christians and then the Muslims started a missionary movement, an evangelical movement. The Christians did it peacefully. The Muslims did it through warfare. But these groups believed in this international movement to take over the world. The Christians through love, Muslims through fear and subjugation, but the left, the Marxist had that same, and that's, it shows you one more time, Marxism is it's a religion that doesn't have a God in it. It has government, it has philosophy in it, but they had the same crazy desire to take the world over. So, you know, that's what you're dealing with there. But, you know, either way, Islam and Marxism, two sides of the same coin, in my opinion. Here's Tucker Carlson on this crazy, you know, between, I don't know what's worse, the apparent Marxism that was behind Obama's decision making, or his almost worship of Islam. I they're both terrible. Here's Tucker.
Well, President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran was hated by a lot of people from the very beginning, and now new details are showing just how much this country gave up to get that deal. A report by Politico reveals the Obama administration released a number of prisoners who had smuggled military technology for the Iranian regime and dropped arrest warrants for 14 wanted fugitives. In some cases, they prevented federal agents from apprehending people who were wanted Iranians. Well, this move outraged federal prosecutors. Congressman Eric Swalwell represents California. He voted for the Iran deal. He joins us now. Congressman, thanks a lot for coming on.
Congratulations on the new time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I hope the president gets to go to bed earlier now, too.
I hope so,
yeah,
too.
That'd be good for all of us.
So you issued a statement when you went on board with the Iran deal, and you said this: after participating in classified briefings, asking tough questions of the Obama administration, meeting with proponents and opponents, listening to my constituents, I've concluded this is the best deal we can get, in effect.
Yeah, I still believe that.
So you weren't told in classified briefings, presumably, or in response to your, quote, tough questions of the Obama administration, that we were releasing fugitives who were smuggling military technology to a terrorist regime. Were you told that? Did you know that?
I didn't know about this part of the deal. I don't agree with everything that happened, but I think being farther away from a nuclear Iran is a good thing, and that's where we are right now.
Well, everyone would agree with that. The question is, how do you get there? And
we also got prisoners back.
These are, we did,
yeah,
not all.
Four of them.
Not all. There are Americans still missing. That's
that
exactly right, that we did nothing about. Yeah. But leaving that aside, you said you didn't know about this. This is not a small detail. So this is Politico's description. Some of these prisoners released from the United States, who were described by the president at the time as, quote, civilians charged with nonviolent offenses, quote, were threats to U.S. national security, according to the Obama administration's own Justice Department. Would you have voted for it if you'd done that?
You know, I'm not going to go back in time. What I know is that President Trump has a nuclear threat in North Korea. And if he had to deal with two nuclear threats today, I think that would be quite complicating for all of us. So I'm happy that he only has one nuclear threat to deal with.
That's in two ways. One, dodging the question. But in another way, you're assuming that the Iran deal mitigated the Iranian nuclear threat. And that's a massive assumption. We don't know that that's true at all.
Well, Secretary of State Tillerson just certified that they lied to you about this? Well, Secretary of State Tillerson last week sent to Congress that Iran is in compliance. And so they went from being 3 months away from having a nuclear weapon to now, if they restarted their program and violated all of the agreements, it would take them at least a year.
To the extent we know, and we've been fooled before on a bipartisan basis. But I want to get back to the question here, which is, why do you think the Obama people lied to you about this?
Tucker, I don't know if they lied to Congress or lied to anyone.
They didn't tell you.
Well, there's a lot.
You had to vote on this in public. You probably took a lot of heat for it, too, because a lot of people hated this.
I voted,
some of your constituents.
I voted on taking nuclear weapons away from Iran, and we are safer because of that. Now, we need to count on our allies.
That's a talking point. Let's get really specific. Okay. So in one case here, according to Politico, and no one from the Obama administration has denied this, as part of the deal, U.S. officials even dropped their demand for $10 million that a jury said the aerospace engineer illegally received from Iran. In another case, the Obama administration thwarted federal attempts to apprehend fugitives. They actually got in the way of federal agencies bringing these people to justice. If you had known that, would you have voted for it?
Again, this is stuff I wasn't familiar with. I think they probably could have done a lot better job of working with, you know, the agents and the Department of Justice lawyers who were working on these cases. But Tucker, at the end of the day, we are all safer. What we should do now is pass in Congress the bipartisan Iran Sanctions Act.
Okay.
They are testing nuclear weapons. They are testing ballistic missiles.
Okay. Nader Hagighi, he got 27 months for fraudulently obtaining FAA credentials. He wasn't an Iranian-American. He was an Iranian national living in Houston. Why would someone like that get FAA credentials illegally?
Tucker, you've
got more than 2 years in prison. Why would we let a guy like that go?
You've got the wrong guy if you think I'm going to come here and defend Iran. I'm going to defend
the
United States.
No, no, but you voted for it. You're saying it made us safer. Why would letting a guy like that free make us safer?
And I don't agree with every part of the deal. I'm telling you right now, we're much safer because they don't have a nuclear weapon.
But how do you
know? We should
know?
Make sure they're not testing ballistic missiles so that we protect
Israel
and other countries.
Look, I'm not saying you're pro-Iran. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is you were hoodwinked. You got lied to. No, you got lied to. You admitted you got lied to. You issued a statement saying, look, I know the truth. I was briefed in a confidential briefing. I asked hard questions to these guys. They told me the truth, but they didn't tell you the truth. They lied to you and every other member. And I'm just wondering why you would defend that.
They're a different branch of government that has to really – debate and focus on, you know, exacting details. They brought a top line deal.
This is terrible to sit here and listen to this stuff. The defense of this stuff is just makes you want to vomit. This is from Politico, which is no friend of conservatives or the president. The Iran deal, the full picture, a snapshot of those involved in the deal, including key players. Obama didn't mention Josh Meyer, 24th, so it's 2 days old. On January 14th, 2016, President Barack Obama went on national TV to announce the formal implementation of the nuclear deal with Iran and another top-secret deal that secured the release of four Iranian Americans imprisoned by Tehran. In exchange, Obama said he was granting clemency to six Iranian Americans and one Iranian man convicted of or waiting trial in the U.S. for violation of U.S. sanction laws, and that none of them were charged with terrorism or any other violent offense. So totally wrong, total lies to get this deal passed. And so it was so important to the Obama administration that Hillary win because that's the only way to keep a lid on all of his presidential decrees and the Iranian deal and such. He has harmed America probably more. I'm trying to think of another president. I mean, obviously, through the things that happened, Nixon badly damaged America. But I mean, I think that in terms of incompetence, in terms of a lack of enthusiasm about America, why did the guy even run? The only possible explanation for why Obama ran is because he wanted to reset the international level of nations to help his internationalism. We got some local news right here, Kelly O'Connell. AM Las Cruces 523-1450 and 805-6180. We'll be right back. I got the texter with me.
Ryan, it's a theater. It's commonplace around here. When the sun goes down, nobody's wearing a frown.
And I've got Ben Rawson, who's going to call in briefly. He's pretty busy this morning, but he's going to briefly call in and make a comment about Julia Brown and her termination. And he had been critical of Julia for quite a while, 523-1450, if you want to get your voice on the record. But a lot of problems in the county. And, you know, the fact that Billy Garrett didn't share that review and Wayne Hancock didn't share that view, that review with anybody else. And then she's given this huge raise and now she's undoubtedly going to sue the county is a little bit sad. I think that, you know, it's just one disaster after another. With these people, and it's avoidable stuff, you know. And I mean, Billy Garrett, and this is the same thing that you see in this national news, in international news, leftists who think that they're above anybody else and only their opinion matters. Shame on you, Billy. Now, here's a little bit from KVIA on this topic. Hold on just a second here.
Diana County Manager Julia Brown is out of a job this evening. Commissioners voted 4-1 to fire Brown. The decision comes just 7 months after the previous commission renewed her contract. We first broke the news on ABC 7 at 4. New Mexico Mobile Newsroom reporter Jamie Warren has been following this story closely. She joins us live from the Diana County Government Center with the very latest. Jamie.
Well, we're going to sell our emotions ran high before and after today's vote here at the Government Center. It's not exactly known why Brown was fired. Commissioner John Vasquez, who made the motion to terminate her today, left out the back door and wouldn't comment.
I motioned that the county manager's contract be terminated effective immediately.
I didn't expect to be up here because I really didn't think you were going to try and do this. It's insanity.
From elected officials to county employees, dozens said they felt betrayed and embarrassed commissioners would even consider firing Brown.
Go ahead, let her go. And all the darkness and the evil and the political corruption that you're spewing here today haunt you in the darkest hour.
A blatant disregard for public interest, a horrendous waste of taxpayer money.
Because I'm convinced that Julia is concentrating on the important things for the county that we've asked her to. I'll keep advocating for them, but I don't expect for her and the rest of this county to dance around like puppets because of our interests.
Brown tearfully hugged her employees goodbye. The commissioners who voted to fire her had very little to say afterwards.
We're just going in a different direction. The county's just moving forward in a different direction.
Would you call this a political move?
I would call it retaliation. I would call it discrimination. And I would call it politics at its worst.
Brown says she was never given a formal evaluation. She said it's very possible she'll be filing a lawsuit in the future. Her early termination is already costing taxpayers $71,000. Reporting live from the Doniana County Government Center with our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Jamie Warren, ABC 7. Okay.
And so then the question is, what were the sins of Julia Brown? And we do have Ben Rawson here. Ben, I don't know if you heard that clip, but kind of an amazing move.
Kelly, no, I didn't hear the clip.
Well, anyway, it was just kind of a summary that she was, Julia Brown was terminated. And without explanation, and so that a litany was given, a number of people came up there. One woman talking about darkness, the darkness of political corruption, and she hoped the darkness would descend on Doniana County commissioners. Ben, you had mentioned a number of times dissatisfaction with what was going on in the county, and Julia Brown was one of the sticking points.
Kelly, when we talk about political corruption at the county,
when you have Billy Garrett, Lane Hancock give a 3-year contract extension with a 30% raise to a county manager they've never bothered to do an evaluation for, that's political corruption.
Well, even worse, Ben, even worse, evaluations are done and they're not even shared. It's wasted effort. Right. So let me ask you this, just a simple question. As a person who knows the rules and has been there a long time, is there any chance if she had a good evaluation, it would have been hidden?
No.
That's inconceivable, right? I mean, if she had a 10 out of 10, that it's inconceivable that that would be put under the mattress and that she, you know, we would have just, you know, kept going along without talking about it.
You know, and Kelly, you've got the fact that this 3-year contract was given after 2 new commissioners were elected. The fact that that was done just to keep them from having a say on who was going to lead the county is wrong to the voters who elected the new commissioners. And Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock, they decided that's what they wanted to do, and they didn't want the new commission to have a say. And that's just wrong.
And that's the same.
It's not letting the voters have a say.
And that's the same thing that was done with this this county, the Planning Act or whatever I can't remember.
The UDC.
Yeah. And
Unified
Development
Code.
There is an idea out there in leftism that the leftists know reality. They're the only ones who are wearing the 3D glasses that can really make out reality. Only they know how to love. Only they know how to decision make. Only these far leftists know and have the proper value system to make decisions for other people's. And it just seems like it blows up in our face every time. Here's a situation where Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock have put us in a position of losing another lawsuit because they refuse to share these reviews. And I'm sure that Wayne Hancock went back to Florida to Carpetbagger City laughing his head off, thinking he'd really game the county again.
You know, Kelly, and of course I'll be on there tomorrow morning and we'll talk more about this, but it is really a disservice to the voters and the citizens of Doñana County when we have the commission go through an evaluation process and the then chairman Billy Garrett the first year and then chairman Wayne Hancock the second year refused to give that evaluation to Julia, and it's a disservice to Julia because then she can't
defenders of
to improve.
Yeah. And you know, everybody remembers the fight between her and Kiki and her coming up and slam dunking the restraining order on the microphone and just the debacle and I'm not saying that Julia Brown is the only person who's guilty of putting a bad, you know, angle on stuff, but I mean it never seems to get any better. It never seems to get any better.
Well, hopefully we'll be getting better now. I'm very pleased that we've selected Chuck McMahon as the acting county manager, and I think that's a good choice. I think he'll do well leading the county for right now until we go through a searching process.
Okay, well, I know we're going to do a whole show on it, or at least a whole segment on it tomorrow. And, folks, this is Ben Rawson of Rawson's Builder Supply, the sponsor of the show. And, Ben, we really owe it to you for all the information you bring us every week.
Thank you very much, Kelly. See you tomorrow.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, folks, let's take a break for the weather here. The lady gets fired. So, black woman, what is she supposed to say? You know, it's prejudice, it's racism, it's anti-female. I mean, if she's never given a review because these you know, genius leftists decide that it's in their benefit to not hand over a review that was obviously less than sparkling or they would have shared it, then you can hardly blame her if she decides to go hire an attorney and So anyway, 6:46 a.m. Las Cruces, a.m. 1450, 523, 1450, and I've got some weather for you, and we'll be back.
we live. Every night, that's the way that it is. Honky tonkers don't cry.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, I don't want to appear on the air, but I have some comments for you if you're willing to hear them out.
Yeah, why don't we bring it on the air, though, especially if it's in disagreement, then people will hear more than one side.
I just tell you, I'd rather just whisper in here and let you know.
All right.
You know, who are the people that write these contracts up that don't give the county an out on these undesirable employees?
Hey, hold on. I'm going to write this down. Who's writing contracts without an escape clause?
Right. And also, I would be willing to, as a citizen, file a lawsuit against those county commissioners for malfeasance of duty and go after them civilly to recover anything that the county has to pay out in a lawsuit towards Julia Brown.
All right. Well, you know, she's going to go to court, and I'll bet you she wins.
They set her up.
They set her up so she could win, whether they meant to or not. All right. Number three?
Primarily just those right now. But if that happens, I might just myself go down and sue their asses.
All right. So listen, you're in favor of bringing Wayne Hancock back, in other words, and making him account for his decisions.
That's the whole idea behind holding people accountable.
Right. Okay. All right. Hey, thanks.
Thank you, Kelly. You're doing a good job, sir.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye. All right. I just got a phone call from someone who preferred not to come on the air. Number one, the question he puts out there is who's writing the contracts in which there's no escape clause in case of failure to perform? And number two, he's thinking about a citizen's lawsuit for malfeasance of duty against these county commissioners that did this. And I said, well, then you're in favor of bringing Wayne Hancock back to New Mexico from Florida so that he has to answer to his decision makings. And he said, that is exactly right. That's exactly right. That's the whole purpose, is to try to make people accountable. Now, look, whatever it was that caused the county commission to fire Julia Brown, it had to be serious, because like the lady that got up there and stated waste of the money that 79,000 or whatever that she was going to get paid. And her salary, I believe, is 135,000. So it was raised. But here's the thing. You're a leftist, and you think that you're smarter than everybody else, because leftism is a study in promoting yourself as an incredible genius. So you get up and make decisions, or you make decisions behind the scenes, and then, you know, the decisions don't work out. And what do? You blame other people. You point other fingers. I got news for Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock. Just because you claim to follow leftism, socialism, Marxism, whatever it is that you want to call your progressivism, whatever you want to call your beliefs, it doesn't put you beyond criticism. It doesn't make you the de facto, leader of all people, especially, you know, you get into office to represent other people. You know, there are no hereditary kingships in America, or you know, there's no kings or queens, supposedly. And you've got these people who are, and this is the thing, think about this. They're convinced of their own genius, and therefore, it's as if their decisions are synonymous with good, with right, with justice, with best practices. And then they get caught with their pants down, where they're hiding information from people, from what I understand. They refused to give these reports that were done of Julia Brown. And I was told by somebody, and it wasn't Ben Ross, and it was somebody else off the record, that her initial review was D-. It almost couldn't be worse. This stuff is hidden. It's swept under the carpet. And they think, it's like in sports. You get someone who's a marginal quality player or somebody who has one good season, and you give them a giant contract, and you think that that's going to make them a great player. Well, I'll tell you, giving her a 30% raise didn't solve the issues that obviously bedeviled the minds of the county commissioners. That's the darkness here. That's the lady is getting up and talking about the political corruption. You can't have leadership by far leftists because they don't know how to cooperate. They don't know how to do things transparently. 6:53, got to take one more break. We'll come back with a little comedy. Here's a little Tim Wilson. Garth Brooks has ruined my life.
What's the big deal about Garth Brooks? What's he got that I ain't got? Except the biggest country album in history and girls screaming in the parking lot. My wife thinks Garth Brooks on the moon. Yeah, the woman thinks Garth is great. But if you ask my honest opinion, I think Garth needs to lose some weight. But I look better in a hat than he does, and I got a lot more hair. I miss the dance, still felt the pain, and I've never had an answered prayer. I wrote 100 songs about rodeo, but my wife wouldn't listen to mine. And I've got friends in places so old, Garth Brooks couldn't even find. Garth Brooks, you better hope we never meet, or I'll from you in the dirt. I'll slap that resist all off your head and choke you with a Garth Brooks t-shirt. She has taken down our wedding pictures and put up a poster of you. And if your name comes up again when she's sleeping, there's no telling what I'll do. We went through this a few years ago when she was dreaming about George Strait. But now the name Garth Brooks are two words that I have grown to hate. Brother, you look like a cowboy airport controller with that ugly little microphone. Why don't you trot your butt back to Oklahoma and leave my life alone? I'm sick of Garth Brooks. I'm tired of hearing about Garth Brooks. I think I've had enough of Garth Brooks. She's addicted to Garth Brooks. She wants to be Mrs. Garth Brooks. He needs liposuction. Garth Brooks. Fresh horses hate him. Garth Brooks. I'm glad he gave it back. Garth Brooks. Yeah, thank you, Hootie. Garth Brooks. Thank you, Alan Jackson. Garth Brooks.
Okay, so 6:59 on the button, and we will definitely be back after break on the hour. But gone is Julia Brown, 6:59. We're going to hear more about that tomorrow, but we'll be back after break on the hour with 1,000 stories. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450-805-6180. All right. I was planning on doing some stuff on free speech today, which I'm still going to do, but I can't help but think that Julia Brown, who's been fired from her position as the county commissioner, the county manager, was harmed and not helped, initially helped, but then harmed by this decision to hide her evaluations. And it was childish, you know? And so what does that say about the decision-making powers of Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock? And if you gave them truth serum, I'm sure they'd both tell you you're an idiot for not being a leftist. And even a child would know that what they believe in is correct. And the fact of the matter is, leftism always fails. So if these guys are so brilliant, how did they not notice that? Just kind of a, you know, rhetorical question, I guess they call it. Now, here's one thing that it just kind of bugs me, that Obama gets out of office and Obama, you know, Obama claimed that his administration never had one scandal. And so he gets, when he gets, there's a bidding war, he gets a $65 million contract to write a book. I mean, how is that possible? But anyway, here's just a little clip on that. But he's also charged, you know what he's charging? Here's this guy, this great socialist, this guy that believes in helping the poor, in theory, right? A guy who's against capitalism. $400,000 for a speech. So these hypocrite leftists always want to have it both ways. He never had one problem spending the people's money flying back and forth taking a million vacations, walking around. You know, he kind of trotted. He trotted like he was some athletic stud. And so hip and cool and everything. I think that all of his ideas have fallen by the wayside. Here's a little bit on his book.
There's word now on how much former President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama have scored in a joint book deal. The reporting comes from the Financial Times newspaper. Now, background. Former President Bill Clinton believed to have set the current record at $15 million back in 2004. President George W. Bush got $10 million for his bestseller, published in 2010. Hillary Clinton got $8 million for her memoir, which came out back in 2003. So how much for the Obamas, Michelle and Barack Obama together? Trace Gallagher, $65 million?
$65 million, Shep, and apparently the bidding war went down to the wire, but Penguin Random House beat out Macmillan, Simon & Schuster, and HarperCollins, which is owned by the parent company of Fox News. Not a huge surprise that Penguin won the auction, considering its imprint, Crown Books, also published the former president's three other books, Dreams from My Father, Audacity of Hope, and of Thee I Sing, which was a letter written to his daughters. Crown also published the former First Lady's food and gardening book, American Grown. The CEO of Penguin released a statement that reads in part, quote, "With their words and their leadership, they change the world, and every day with the books we publish at Penguin Random House, we strive to do the same. The Obamas reportedly plan to donate a significant portion of the proceeds to charity, including the Obama administration." Now, there has been no release about the details of the books, but ABC News is reporting the former president's book will be kind of a straightforward memoir about his presidency. And we do know Mr. Obama kept a journal from his time in office, so it's likely the book will include a lot of behind-the-scenes moments as major events unfolded. He's also expected to talk about race relations.
Who cares? You know how many books you'd have to sell to I mean, that's insane. In my opinion, the first time I heard this, I thought, somebody has just given this guy a whole bunch of money for being a lefty, for 8 years of leftism. Now, $400,000 Wall Street speaking fee will undermine everything Obama believes. And what makes anybody think that these leftists believe in anything? You know, these far leftists get into power in a communist country, and every single thing that they claim to be about, they totally trash. And it becomes a one-person rule. And you remember what Obama said about he wished he didn't have to go through the legislature. Just the, you know, it's in his heart. The guy is a would-be tyrant. All right, so I want to get into some free speech stuff here because there is something that's going on out there that we've talked about a little bit. But, I do have, though, a couple of local stories, but I want to get into those first. But let me let's take a break, and then I'll kind of be ready for the next round. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. We'll be right back. 805-6180. Frankie, stop sending me gibberish texts. You're an idiot. You know, Frankie must be too sauced laying in bed in his pajamas and his Depends to even call in. But I won't even bore you with the details. What a pinhead. 712, we'll be right back.
She was arrested. She was officially
it's coming. Well, my weather is just around the corner. And 1 hour air on sea is a heck of a deal for you. They'll install a new air conditioning unit.
All right, here is about a fire that is raging over in Arizona that's getting quite a bit bigger. And it is bigger than Manhattan. Here's from the Weather Channel.
Well, in Arizona, about 300 firefighters are fighting a fire southeast of Tucson. It's called the Sawmill Fire. It's in Green Valley, and it's grown really, really fast. At last check, it's now up close to 20,000 acres burned, and that's a lot more than what the last check was before that, which was about 7,000 acres. And the reason that this thing has grown so fast is because the wind has been really, really strong on a Tuesday. Now, the good news is the next couple of days, the wind won't be quite as strong. It's still going to be a little bit on the breezy side, still very dry. But just to give you an idea of where this fire is, again, it's southeast of Tucson. You can see it's included in that red flag warning area. More than 100 homes have been evacuated in the Santa Rita Mountains. They've got hotshot crews, fire engines, air tankers, helicopters. It's going to be a tough one to fight over the next couple of days.
And fire danger area goes all the way from the far west of the bottom of Arizona all the way through Arizona, through the bottom of New Mexico into Texas. So we're in an area that they're claiming is has a fire danger right now. All right. So here is a little bit switching gears here. An attack against free speech, and here's a little bit from Hannity.
Frustrated effort by the intolerant left in this country that is designed to silence every conservative voice and by any means necessary. Now, I am speaking out tonight so that you, our audience, will understand what is really happening here and what is really at stake when it comes to freedom of speech in this country. Now, these tactics are right out of Saul Alinsky's Rule for Radicals playbook. I've worked in radio for 30 years. I've been right here at the Fox News Channel for 21 and a half years. I'm very proud of that. And during this time, there's always been efforts and attempts to smear and slander and besmirch me and other conservatives. But it has never been as intense and completely insane as it is right now. Now, I want you to understand, every single minute, every single second I am on the air, radio, TV, there's somebody, likely being paid, recording and monitoring every single word that comes out of my mouth, all in the hopes that I may say something they can twist and distort and use against me and try and destroy my reputation, get my conservative voice off the air. Now, it's only gotten worse in the age of President Trump. Now, it's no secret I've been a supporter of the president and, of course, his policies. And quite simply, these liberal fascists, they can't stand conservative voices. Now, for those of you who don't know me well, I have a pretty thick skin. I call out people, I say things, I give my point of view 4 hours a day, and for all these years, well, there has been endless, unrelenting attacks against me. But now, in light of recent events, I have come to the conclusion I can no longer remain silent, and I can no longer let the left slander against me slide. So from now on, and I want you to be informed of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, if there's any person, any group, any organization, any media outlet that slanders, lies about me, besmirches me, my character, I'm going to be calling them out. Because at this point, enough is enough. I have hired a team of some of the best attorneys in...
Well, okay, this is not about Sean Hannity, obviously. He was accused... I don't even know what he was accused of. I couldn't sum it up, but... I mean, they go after all these guys. They went after O'Reilly, who, as far as I could tell, hadn't broken any laws, but was a pest, I guess a sex pest or whatever. And now we've got this issue for just briefly on Ann Coulter, who is a conservative commentator, and they are trying to block her. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of anybody who is conservative. They don't want these young people to be exposed to the terrors of conservatism. Here is from CBS This Morning.
Berkeley. This comes after the school canceled a visit by conservative author Ann Coulter. Officials said it was for security reasons, and they offered to reschedule. Violent protests broke out on campus in February when another conservative, Milo Yiannopoulos, was scheduled to speak. John Blackstone is in Berkeley, California. John, good morning.
Good morning. Well, it was, of course, here on the Berkeley campus that the free speech movement was born in the 1960s. Now, Ann Coulter is battling to be heard here after the university rescheduled a speech planned for this week. Now, Coulter is insisting she's going to come here as originally planned.
Oh, yes. I'm going to be there Thursday.
On the Berkeley campus, college Republicans are fighting to give Coulter a platform this week. They filed a lawsuit Monday trying to force the university to ease restrictions they say are only placed on conservative speakers. In a statement, the university says the allegation that Ms. Coulter is being prohibited from speaking because of her conservative views is untrue. Instead, they blame outside agitators known as the Black Bloc, who rampaged across the campus in February, stopping a speech by the controversial conservative Milo Yiannopoulos and causing $100,000 in damage. The university did offer you another location at another time. What was wrong with that?
Unfortunately, I wasn't available that
day.
It's
Kelly.
Moreover, I found out later,
Kelly, please talk.
Criticism isn't only coming from the right,
Kelly,
but also
let me
from
put you on hold, okay?
Like comedian
I'll put
Bill
you on
Maher.
Hold.
Berkeley, you know,
okay.
used to be the cradle of free speech, and now it's just the cradle for babies.
And the fact that people like Bill Maher and Bernie Sanders were all coming out saying Berkeley is out of its mind, all of these things come together to show how cocooned and out of touch American universities are today.
Since the election, demonstrations against conservative speakers have turned violent on several campuses, including the University of Washington, where one man was shot in a clash between protesters. Ann Coulter says the threats won't stop her.
Okay, they won't stop here. Where we do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron, Kelly.
Hey, Aaron. It's been a long time. How you been?
I've been pretty good, pretty good.
What's going on? What's on what's on your mind?
Well, I just, you know, I think we're reaching the tipping point with this whole leftist movement. I think they're revealing who they are, who they've always been. I think a lot of us always knew it. But, you know, we're just going to have to start, you know, it's about ideas primarily. That's what we want it to be as conservatives. You know, we believe in free speech and we believe in, you know, people having the right to live their lives as they see fit. But we're going to have to just become more aggressive and fight these people. You know, when these people, these black hoods show up at these events, they're going to have to just be beaten off. And if that means getting the police involved or having a bunch of Harley riders show up, then that's what it's going to take because these people, they're not going to relent. They're not going to relent. So I don't know how it's going to go in the long run. I don't see it getting any better. But I think we're headed down a bad path, and unfortunately, I think that's what it's going to take.
Well, it's always been a fight for free speech, so I agree with you. Anything else?
No, I was just wondering what you thought about the news that Trump's going to be looking at all these new national monuments over the last 20 years and possibly scaling them back in size. And I wondered if you heard anything if the Oregon Mountain one was going to be reviewed.
Well, I was actually going to comment on that, but the article that I found was so long, I wanted to read it tonight and report on it tomorrow. But I'm 100% in favor of that. So absolutely. I think, you know, these presidents, especially Obama, did anything that they wanted and acted like they were God. And now we've got to push back. And that's exactly why people voted for Trump in the first place. Thanks for the call, Aaron. Have a great day. All right, folks, let's get into something real quick here. Good to hear from Aaron again. Does free speech offend you? I'm going to do a big report on the monument thing tomorrow. I just want some more time to study it.
Speech. The ability to express yourself. It's a cherished idea.
This is from Prager University, by the way. And we do have another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Good morning, Kelly. This is your good friend, Bob. How
Bob, Bob, 30 seconds or less. Give it to us.
I owe you a gift card. It was amazing going to the county commissioners yesterday and talking to them. If you ever get the chance, go there. I love you. Everybody have a good time. I'm busy seeing doctors and lawyers.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Our daily report from Bob, the Bob. Mob Report. All right, here we go. Does free speech offend you?
As well it should be. Most of us who live in liberal Western democracies think of it as a basic human right. People have fought and died for it. But now we may be in danger of losing it. The threat is not coming from without, from external enemies, but from within. A generation is being raised not to believe in freedom of speech, but rather that they should have freedom from speech they dislike. This is a threat to both pluralism and democracy itself. We see this in Europe, where sensitivity-based censorship attempts to ban anything deemed hateful or even just hurtful, and to ban criticism of religion, especially Islam. But the United States, despite its strong constitutional protections in the Bill of Rights, is far from immune from the rising trend of suppression of speech, or what is sometimes called political correctness. This is especially true at America's colleges and universities, the place where our future leaders are educated and where you'd expect speech to be the most free. Highly restrictive speech codes are now the norm on campus, not the exception. According to a study by my organization, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, FIRE, 54% of public universities and 59% of private universities impose politically correct speech codes on their students. And thanks to recent Department of Education guidelines, 100% of colleges may adopt speech codes in the coming years. How bad is it? At a public campus in California on Constitution Day in 2013, a student who also happens to be a decorated military veteran was told he could not hand out copies of the Constitution to his fellow students. The objection from the university was not ideological. It was out of control bureaucracy imposing limits on speech. That same day, another college student in that same state was told he could not protest NSA surveillance outside of a tiny free speech zone, an area that comprised only 1.37% of the campus. Months later, college students in Hawaii were told both they could not hand out the Constitution to their fellow students and that they could not protest NSA policies outside the school's free speech zone.
All right, I want to, because we're tight on time here, I've got a little clip for you on something that's very important. John Milton is regarded as the second greatest or the greatest writer in English history. And he wrote Paradise Lost. He wrote some exceptional poems outside of that and sonnets and stuff. He also wrote something called Area Pagatica. It was a time in which he moved from pure poetry into political pamphleteering, and he also worked for the government. He reached levels of intellectual achievement that are probably unparalleled in terms of his joint careers. Here's a little bit on the history of free speech, which is rightly tied in part to Area Pagatica, John Milton's demand for free speech.
Continuing with my 2016 reading list, these are three philosophical texts that I'd like to talk about. You will see I've also hung Raphael's The School of Athens behind me to put us in the mood. So, John Milton, Areopagitica. This is written in 1644. It is a treatise on censorship. It is addressing at that time, the imprimaturs of the church. Those were the guardians of publication. So if one wished to write and publish something, especially about God, you would have to get the signatures of the imprimaturs in the various sections around their church designations or something. So it is a refutation of that, in which we don't want a pre-censorship, a pre-censored writing, a pre-censored publication. So I think it is very topical for 2016 because we're continually trying to censor a great many things, and you'll see that's kind of a theme I'm going to talk about. So there's a lot in here. This book has 119 or so footnotes, at least this publication. I've read through them. I mean, I've read this in multiple sittings. It's really complicated to try to distill a couple of things down, but let me try to give you something essential to Milton's case. Milton says in here, good and evil, we know in the field of this world grow up together almost inseparably. And the knowledge of good is so involved and interwoven with the knowledge of evil, and in so many cunning resemblances, hardly to be discerned, those confused seeds which were more imposed on psyche as an incessant labor to call out and sort asunder were not more intermixed. It was from out the rind of one apple tasted that the knowledge of good and evil as two twins cleaving together leapt forth into the world. He's talking about good and evil as twins. And perhaps this is that doom which Adam fell into of knowing good and evil. That is to say, of knowing good by evil. And there's a lot to this, but this is, I think, so essential, in which we have to acknowledge that.
All right, I just want to break in here a little bit, because the key point of free speech this guy's hitting on here that Milton realized was you've got to have an explanation of an entire subject to know what the good parts and the bad parts are. If, as you do with the left, you don't let people talk about certain subjects, there's no information for the listeners to understand whether the people who hold a certain belief are correct.
To know a thing such as to know what it is to not be racist, one must know what racism is. And so if we continue to try to eliminate racism, we can't really know what it's like to not be racist. And so it's seeing these as relationships in which we might not ever fully want to stamp out racism, because, well, I'll just say my goal is to not be a racist. And so I can also know what that is through seeing what racism is in others. So it's about, Okay. So there's another point in here.
All right.
Censorship and the Reformation. This gets a little complicated.
All right. So basically, John Milton lived through the time when you had the Puritan Revolution in England, and what you had was a return of the Bible in a native language so that the average person could read it. And then you had this giant growth of churches and a lot of ideas that related to science and art, as you see with Milton and the scientists such as Isaac Newton, greatest scientist in history, who had a Puritan upbringing. You had political theory. You had so many different things coming out of this revolution, but it could have never happened unless they got rid of the ideas behind censorship. At that time, it was the church that would decide what could or couldn't be published. Now, the government acts like a church, and it's completely off the rails. 7:34 local news. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180. All right, I'm going to go back to this themes. I had something from Bill Nye, the science guy, and some stuff related to him, and this guy's just the biggest imbecile. You know, I finally went and read the guy's biography. He was a guy that worked for Boeing, and then he decided to get involved in comedy. I mean, he's a comedian. How he ended at, with a mechanical engineering degree, how this guy ended up becoming the face of science is, I mean, to be totally honest, I think it's fitting. the guy is an absolute joke. And, you know, that him debating evolution, you know, there's probably an absolutely fact-free encounter. And I do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Jim. I haven't talked with you in a while. How are you?
Jim, another, looks like these people are suddenly surfacing again. What's going on?
Well, I was just picking up on something you said a little while ago, and I agree with you. Going after Bill O'Reilly, I mean, you're right. I don't think that was what it's about. I think it was going after Fox. Now they're going after Hannity, and then who will be next? Their attempt is to take Fox down, and they're being helped by, I've read some research on the Murdoch kids, especially James and Lachlan. There's been argumentative between the two, and James is, and their mother siding with getting rid of O'Reilly because one of the guy's wives is absolutely hated him, O'Reilly. So I think that this whole thing is being concocted to be able to change Fox from what it was. I have been watching the new format, and Tucker's doing a pretty good job in a different style than O'Reilly did it, but he's still confrontational, but in a different way. I was at first not real happy with the five, but we watched them a little bit, and finding out that there was a pretty good discussion they had last night, and keeping what's his name, Donald, from being such a comedian all the time. It was a pretty decent show. And then Sean now, of course, has said, hey, I'm putting up with enough of this stuff. I'd retain some attorneys, and
Jim,
we're not going to sit by idly anymore.
Jim, remember one of the rules of the show, take a breath.
Oh, I didn't hear you.
No, this is a new rule I've instituted, and people call in that you've got to breathe. You've got to agree to breathe while you're on the air. Just pulling your leg there. But I wanted to get a little response in. There's no doubt that that O'Reilly, as they took him down, and it was about. I mean, I don't think the guy did any. From what I can heard, he sounded like he was just kind of a classic, old fashioned pervert, or a guy that hits on women at his workplace, which used to happen. It probably happens just as much now in a different format, but. But I think that he, you know, from what I understand, he was making passes at women or whatever. It doesn't sound like he assaulted anybody. He was not a Bill Cosby, or that would have come out. But you're right. What has happened? There's no difference probably between who you mentioned, James, whatever his name is, the son
Murdoch.
Murdoch. There's no difference between James Murdoch probably and Billy Garrett. These people get in their mind that leftism is true, and they become evangelists, and the entire world can be destroyed. It doesn't matter. Everything's got to be destroyed as long as the liberal vision is continued. Now, I've got a few clips to play. Was there anything else?
Yeah, one last thing regarding Mr. Ralston's visit tomorrow. The county manager, maybe you might want to look at if he's interested. Our old friend that ran for on
briefly.
The seat there.
Briefly, hurry up.
Yeah, he might be good.
I didn't catch the name. Who was it?
Oh, Kim Hakes.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. Well, Kim's an interesting guy. Thanks for the call, Jim. Good to hear you back. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Folks, when you call in, number one, if I'm playing a clip, it's a one-man show here. You're not going to be able to hear me because I've got the clip playing. It's going to be in the background. If the phone stops ringing, don't hang up. Most people hang up. Most people don't say anything. Now, what's the proper course of action? You call in and there's a clip playing. I'm going to be shouting probably, hello, 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 hello. The typical person doesn't say anything because they hear something in the background. Just say hi or whatever. So I know that you're still on the line. And I'm going to put you on hold and wait till the clip is done. Then when you come on the air, take a break, take a breather so that I can respond to your points. And I know it's kind of nerve-wracking to come on the air and everything, but just take a breath between points and so I can respond. Because people want to hear back and forth. All right, we got another call. Thanks for the call. There we go. Call back. All right, so I was getting into, but I do appreciate hearing from Jim, always a great caller. Aaron, a superb caller. All right, Crusades. We're getting into the Crusades. All right, here is Bill Warner, PhD. You can't see this. I didn't play this the last couple of days because you couldn't see it, but his points are important. The Muslims went from Mecca around the Mediterranean in 100 years. And so they went through the Middle East. They went into the upper part of Africa. They came up into Europe and were just going to take everything over. And so they did it by the sword. That's Islam. Here it is. Bill Warner, and he's got a PhD in this stuff. Here we go.
Whenever you're dealing with an apologist for Islam or even a Muslim and you bring up jihad, almost immediately they kick back to you. Well, what about those terrible crusades? Why, they're the moral justification for jihad. I mean, we're just as bad as they are, so let's not talk about jihad, okay? Let's talk about the crusades. Well, what we'd like to talk about here are facts. And it turns out I sat down and put together some work and I created a database of some 548 battles that Islam fought, jihad battles against classical civilization. And this aren't even all the battles. It really doesn't say much about Africa and India, Afghanistan and all that. It's primarily the battles against the classical civilization of Rome and Greece. So 548 battles is a lot, and it's too much to even comprehend. So I created something which I call a dynamic battle map, in which you have a display of the Mediterranean, and a white dot means that this 20-year period, that's a new battle. So every time the screen changes, it's 20-year period. They then, the colors white turn to red, so you can see a history. This may seem a little confusing, but I think when you see it, you'll know exactly what I mean.
All right, you're going to have to go into YouTube and look up Bill Warner, PhD, Jihad versus Crusades. Or just put his name in there, Bill Warner. But anyway, so he's got this map, and as all these battles jump up, there is just this unforgettable impression that you get of how Islam took by the sword the message all around the Mediterranean and almost took over Europe. It's a miracle that Charles Martel beat the Saracens, or the medieval name for the Muslims, at Tours Portier. But he did. His grandson was Charlemagne. Charlemagne changed the history of Europe and became the greatest king alongside Henry the Great in the history of Europe.
And here it starts. Islam burst out of the Arabian Peninsula and immediately starts attacking the Middle East. And notice that it doesn't take long until they're crossing the Mediterranean and attacking southern France and Spain. Notice something here. Most people think of Islam, they think of Arabs, they think of desert. And yet here we see that Islam is projecting power throughout the Mediterranean. Notice how the little islands of the Mediterranean are getting hammered. The navy of Islam would attack coastal towns, kill, rob, rape, and then take slaves. So this whole battle map, as it unfolds, you're seeing slaves being taken. Over 1 million slaves were taken out of Europe into the Islamic world. That's something you don't think about much, but it's absolutely true. There were over 200 battles fought in Spain alone. And we also see, however, on the east coast in Turkey, that Islam is trying to break into Europe. Now, what's going to happen is, in Spain, this ongoing fight that lasted for 400 years, is the Christians are going to push back the Muslims. But now then, what has happened over in the east is that Constantinople has fallen. And now then, Eastern Europe is getting hammered. The jihad now comes to Eastern Europe. It's pushed out now of Spain. Northern Africa is now completely Islamic. The Middle East is completely Islamic. This is all jihad, relentless jihad. And why is it so relentless? Well, Muhammad was relentless in his jihad. And these people are good students of Islam. And so it's against the kafir, on and on. It was traditional that when this
Kafir is unbeliever.
Sultan came to power, the brand new Sultan. He would immediately try to launch new wars because he was going to be noted in his Islamic history as to how well he fought against the Kafir. So that's what the jihad looked like over that time period, 548 battles. But remember, when you bring up jihad, people want to bring up the Crusades. So I also prepared a dynamic battle map of all the offensive raids of the Crusaders. Let's watch it and make a comparison. And so,
all right, so let's take a break here and we'll be back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, 805-6180. Never enough time to cover everything, but we'll come back a little bit more. I'll tell you a little bit on the Templars. All right, here is just one more clip, how the Knights Templar came to be. The Knights Templar, which became the most powerful and influential and richest group during the Crusader period, were originally organized to protect Crusaders.
In 1119, a large group of pilgrims en route to Jerusalem were slaughtered. there was outrage in Europe. The Crusaders feared that if they did not take action, all the gains they had made would be for nothing. Later that same year, nine Crusader knights, led by the French nobleman Hugh de Payen, vowed to devote themselves to the protection of pilgrims.
The Templars come into existence in the wake or the aftermath of the Crusades. There is a perceived problem about the protection of pilgrims who are, of course, coming in greater numbers to Jerusalem in the wake of the success of the First Crusade, and the Templars are organized effectively to provide that escort.
They set up their headquarters here at the Al-Aqsa Mosque on Temple Mount. For over 60 years, this would be the Knights' center of power, their military and religious headquarters. Many believe this to be the original site of Solomon's Temple. For centuries, Christian scholars had speculated about its mystical purpose. The Knights were fascinated by this place, so much so that they called themselves the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon, a title eventually shortened to Knights Templar.
All right, and here's a little Jim Gaffigan bottled water.
From the year 2000, voted number 24, Jim Gaffigan.
The reason I look like this is because my father was from Sweden and my mother was Elton John. Love movies. You ever talk about a movie with someone that happens to have read the book? They're always so condescending. The book was much better. Oh, really? What I enjoyed about the movie? No reading. Yeah. It only took 2 hours, and then I could take a nap. I'm lazy. You ever read an article, and at the bottom it says continued on page 6? Not for me. I'm done. Man. Why don't you stop bossing me around? Yeah, it's great. They got me the water here. I don't even drink it. I drink the bottled water. I feel silly buying it, though. What you think about it, it is water, right? How did we get to the point where we're paying for bottled water? That must have been some weird marketing meeting over in France, you know? Some French guy sitting there, he's like, how dumb do I think the Americans are? I bet you we could sell those idiots water. I was like, Pierre, the Americans are pretty dumb, but they're not going to buy water.
Oh, yes, they are. Let's just tell the Americans the water's from France.
We bought it. I don't know if you like me. When they first introduced bottled water, I thought it was so funny. I was like, bottled water? Because they're selling bottled water. I guess I'll try it. Oh, this is good. This is more watery than water. This has got a water kick to it. I was looking at a bottle. They have nutritional facts printed on the side. Kind of expect to turn the bottle, see a recipe. Yeah. That's how you make ice cubes, huh?
One last tidbit. Aaron Hernandez, who just killed himself in his jail cell, a lonely guy. He had a prison lover. His name was Kyle Kennedy. He was in there for 3 to 5 years, and they say that Aaron Hernandez did his murders to cover up his bisexual life. Now, he had asked the prison if he could be in the same cell with his lover, the 22-year-old armed robber Kyle Kennedy. He was turned down, and it is now on record that he left a suicide note for Kennedy, and that there were three notes and one of them was left to Kennedy. So an extraordinary story got even more strange. And they may release those letters. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Have a great day. Wonderful to hang out with you. Ciao.
Whiskey or God, gonna bring me relief. Believe it or not, bending my elbow or my knee. I'm going to drink until my conscience fades. Before I fall asleep, I want to say a prayer for a brighter day. Whiskey or God, salvation to me.